Hello and welcome to the Software Engineering Unlocked podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michaela, and today I have the pleasure to talk to Armir Salihifendic. Armir is the founder and CEO of Doist. Doist is the company behind the widely successful productivity app Todoist and the collaboration platform Twist. The slogan on the website says, "We create tools that promote a calmer and more balanced, more fulfilling way to work and live." And that's exactly why I'm following the company and also Armir's work already for years. Not only does he promote a remote work culture, but he also stands behind a more meaningful and self-controlled work life. But before I welcome Armir, I wanted to invite you to become an early access reader of some of my draft chapters for my Code Review book. Soon I will give my last Code Review workshop before my summer break. My next workshops are then in August. In the coming month, I will focus completely on writing the Code Review book and doing some original research around code reviews. So if you want to read what I write and follow the process, sign up on michaelagreiler.com/codereviewbook and follow me on Twitter. I also link both in the description. But now let me welcome Armir. Armir, thank you so much for being on my show.
It's a pleasure, yeah.
Armir, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you since, you know, forever is why and how did you actually start Doist? And I know you talked about this a lot, but I would like to know a little bit about this moment that you're working, for example, you're doing your computer science degree and you're working at some companies part-time. So why not join the, let's say, normal workforce? Why not be an employee, a full-time employee somewhere? Why do you go and create your own company, your own project? Why do you work on your own problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting question. And honestly, like, I think I would probably be a very bad employee. So that, like, you know, I never actually, you know, like some people, they grow up and they think like their dream is kind of like join this megacorp. And for me, that was never really the dream. Like for me, the dream is basically creating cool stuff, doing it like in a way that is kind of compatible with, you know, the way that I think and the stuff I want to create in the world. And also the culture I want to be part of. Yeah, so I think maybe it's like personality type. And also like something to note is like I got very early offers, I think when I was like, I don't know, 23, 24, to join like Facebook. And that would probably have made me probably more money than actually like my current, maybe not. I'm actually unsure about that. But, you know, I could have joined like these big companies very early on if I wanted to do that. But it was not really like, it wasn't really something I was super interested in. I really wanted to like create my own path and do my own stuff. Yeah.
But did you have this idea of I want to have or want to make a productivity app at that point? Or was it more I want to be my own boss? I want to, you know, create my own endeavor, something like that.
I mean, honestly, I think like as a software developer myself, what really like always has interest for me is kind of creating stuff. So, and I think actually like if you're starting out and you want to create your own company, then like, you know, creating your own company is the easy step. The much harder step is kind of like finding something that you want to work on. And maybe also a much more productive step is kind of just like being passionate about a problem and trying to solve that problem before you actually create the company. So that's at least like for me, that has been the journey. It's kind of like, you know, finding a problem, solving the problem, and then afterwards creating a company around it. And I think a lot of other companies have like the same journey, especially if you go from like a, you know, software developer to like a company builder. That's usually the journey that is common. Like for instance, like the founder of Dropbox did a very similar thing. Yeah.
So one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated by your work is the mental mindset about, you know, the bootstrap business that are created to be substantial and somehow last forever. And some of your recent articles that I read were that you don't have an exit strategy or that you know, how to become a market leader in 10 years. I really like that very much. And also this idea of balance and ambition, right? Because very often I'm also a little bit involved in the bootstrapped and indie hacker community. And a lot of people want the success overnight, right? It's from I'm starting today and in a year I want to have this really successful company. And then there you are with a product, I think, that a lot of people would love to make. and you made it to be a market leader, but it's not overnight, right? It's something that you work on in 10 years or over that time, right? And so you probably have a lot of knowledge in that space, and that really becomes a competitive advantage, I think, compared to all the others that, you know, either do it like a larger corporation that have it just as their side business, right? So maybe one part that they are not that ambitious about, or people that are, you know, that are investing maybe a year or something. Why do you have this mindset? What do you think, what shaped your beliefs in having this long breath and also, you know, setting up everything for sustainability?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, I'm actually unsure like what has shaped my way of thinking, but something that I think is very problematic is kind of like, if your thinking is short term, then I think like also the decision you make are going to be for the short term and they are not going to be great. So for instance, like if my goal is to sell the company, you know, I will probably not focus that much on like the long-term culture that we are creating or the sustainability, you know, of it, or like the people that we actually are going to hire, because, you know, at some point you'll basically exit this. But if you're kind of stuck with this like forever, then I think like your mindset shifts and then you're much more like, you know, reflective over, you know, what kind of like products do you focus on? What kind of culture do you have? What kind of people do you have? So for me, that's kind of like just a like a forcing mechanism to actually, you know, think better and make better decisions. Yeah. So, and another thing is basically like this notion, and I think like David from Basecamp has stated, is kind of like work on your best idea. So a lot of people, like, they actually, like, postpone, you know, you have, like, a great idea, but you're basically stuck in some kind of, like, local optimum. Like, maybe you work for, like, a huge company or whatever, and you don't have, like, a time to actually focus on your best idea. So for me, it's kind of like, what are the best idea that I have? And, like, for me, the best idea I've had so far, and, of course, it's not only my idea, but, like, companies' ideas, it's kind of like, a tool to organize like your work and your life, and then also like a team communication app that's kind of like mindful and that, you know, helps you, like both of these help you, you know, live a better life and do some better work. Yeah, so I hope I kind of answered this, and like this kind of like mindset is very uncommon in our industry. Like a lot of people, they want, you know, overnight success. They want like, you know, short-term thinking or like short-term project that can basically make you wealthy. But what I'm thinking about is kind of like, okay, if I need to, you know, work on this for like 30 years, you know, then or 40 years or 50 years, you know, it becomes like a very different mindset that you go into this, and also like a very different timeline. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the strengths that you have with Doist or Todoist is that you're actually profitable, right? And so I think this was also one of the things that you had in your mind very early on, to have this profitable business that you are not really depending on the funding of others. But when was the time that you got to this point of profitability? Was it immediately, or did you invest like a year or two before, you know, Todoist was actually bringing in some revenue that you could actually live off and sustainably build that product?
Yeah, so basically it took me about like 6 months to actually create like a business model for Todoist and actually like make it profitable. So it made basically at the beginning, like it just covered the server costs, but you know, it was already profitable for me because I was just like a student and like it earned me some money on the side. But like before I actually started to work full time on Todoist, it took me almost 4 years where it was just like a side project. Yeah. And I would definitely not recommend this. So what I would recommend is kind of like try to like think about the business model from the get-go. Don't really like think about VC funding. Like that's another problem I think a lot of people think about. It's kind of like the goal is kind of to raise money. No, the goal should be to kind of like build a sustainable business. Because that also gives you a lot more options. Like if you want to raise money at some point, you know, you can do it. But the strength is really like building something that people want to pay for, and like building this very early on, and then like creating like a sustainable, you know, business for yourself and for your team. Yeah. So that at least like would be my recommendation in this regard.
So one of the things that I always also admire is this foundation of, you call it balance and ambition. And I'm, for example, a very, very ambitious person, and I really admire balance. I'm not very good in getting it into my life. Somehow I always feel like a little bit defeated by my own ambition. And so I know that you're talking a lot about like the well-being of your employees, and that, you know, they should be healthy and they should eat well and there should be enough time and flexibility and things like that. How are you as a person, right? How are you as the founder and the CEO able to get that in your own life? Do you feel that you are having this balance between ambition and, you know, relaxation? Or as a CEO, you're more on this, you know, stressed and ambitious side?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, I have actually tried to just be focused on ambition. And it was actually, like, I have co-founded another company, a social network, where I almost got, like, burned out because there was basically zero balance. You know, I worked all the time. I was basically like a train wreck, like, in terms of stress. So I have been on the other side, and, like, it's not really a good side to be in, especially if you want to do this for like 40, 50 years. You know, you need to kind of have sustainable way of like living. Yeah. And honestly, that's again, like something that it's unconventional in our industry, because a lot of people are like promoting this hustling, like working all the time. But I think actually it's like, it's not, I don't think it's actually more productive. I think like the people that are actually happy and, you know, satisfied with their life will produce better work, and especially better work like long term. So that's something that I really value and focus on. And I think also like we can learn something from like athletes on this. Like if you look at some like program of like an athlete, for instance, like Federer or whoever else, like they are not, you know, playing tennis all the time or like their sports all the time. They are playing like in intervals where, you know, they go in and they train or play, and then they relax and recharge. And I think like it's the same thing with like mental work, is like you can't be on all the time. You need to actually have like off switch and be able to disconnect, or else I don't, like you will burn out or like you won't really perform that well. Yeah, so that's at least how I think about this. And especially, you know, like the work that we do isn't factory work. You know, it's very creative, and you actually need to have like peak performance that's like really great. It's not about like, you know, grinding it out like 14 hours per day. Like maybe if you had like 3 hours where you could like, you know, create a great algorithm or create a great solution, it's much better spend like 14 hours just like, you know, banging on a keyboard or whatever else. Like, yeah, so that's at least like the mindset I have when I go into this, and why I think like ambition and balance is important. I mean, this said, like, you know, I'm a super ambitious person as well. And a lot of people actually mistake our like ambition and balance to think that it's kind of a relaxed environment, or that we don't expect the best out of people. Like we do. But we think actually like you reach the best by, you know, having an off switch and having a balance in your life. Yeah. So that's how I think about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also think that this is how you're getting enough energy and enough also freedom a little bit in your thoughts, right? And in your some space to think also. But how do you, for yourself, what are some of your maybe tricks or some of your mechanisms that you can actually turn on this switch, right? This is something that is, for example, hard for me. So I have to go and bike, for example, or, you know, do some other sport. The best is being out in the fresh air to really clear my mind and getting out of this, you know, work habit or, you know, work mind race thing. So what works for you? Is that just something that you very, very easily can turn on and off and, you know, now work stopped and I'm, you know, I'm relaxed? Or do you have some things that you're doing to make this transition from ambition to balance?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest here, like, you know, my default mode, like I love what I do. I'm really passionate about the work that I do. And I have like a really hard time switching up as well. And I think like a lot of people, like if you really love what you do, like you will have a huge problem doing that. Yeah. So, and, you know, we have been stuck in this like coronavirus nightmare for the last 3 months on like a lockdown, and it's not really getting better in Chile. So, you know, what I do right now is kind of not really that reflective of what I do usually. So, for instance, for me, like swimming is a great way to shut off. Like going to a park with my son without my, you know, cell phone is another great way. Playing football as well. Like I have found out that I really need, in order to switch off, I really need to kind of like get out and do something active.
Yeah. Very much like I do.
Yeah. And honestly, I think like you can combine those things, and, you know, for some people that works, from some others, like maybe, you know, they play some games or whatever else like they do to kind of relax or see some shows. But for me, like the best is kind of like to actively like do something, and that kind of switches my mind off. Like when I'm in a football match, you know, I don't really think about like the work stuff. Or the same thing is like when I'm, you know, in a park playing with my son, like I don't really think about the work stuff.
So one of the things that I'm very, very passionate about is software engineering practices. So I would like to learn a little bit more about what you're doing at Duist. So do you do code reviews? How do you test your systems? Also, what is your tech stack? And how do you combine that with the remote work, right? So how is the remote work also shaping your software engineering practices? And did they change? Do you think they look a little bit different because of this asynchronous communication, for example?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think like remote first and then combine that with like asynchronous first communication. So it means like we don't actually chit-chat all day long, but like we use, you know, long-form communication mostly. Of course, like we do some meetings here and there, but like most of our communication is written and long-form. This is kind of like, I think, the ideal situation to create like really great software. Yeah, and so that's the first step. And I think there's like multiple layers to this. So first of all, you know, a lot of the problems that we handle in software is very, very hard. So, you know, like if you ping me about like a really on Slack, for instance, or Microsoft Teams about a really hard problem, like it's very unlikely that I will just be able to answer it right away. Or maybe if I can answer it right away, it probably will be like a suboptimal solution. While if I actually like ask you something and you have like a day to sleep on it, then it's likely that you will come up with a much better like solution to the problem. So that's kind of like the work that we promote. It's kind of deep work, ability to like really focus on hard problems and solve them. And also like do this, for instance, like pull requests, I think are an amazing invention that makes this much, much easier to do. And I think it creates much better code and much better systems. So I hope I can like answer this in kind of like a very holistic way.
So especially code reviews are one of my favorite topics, and pull requests, especially I think to Duist or Duist, you're using GitHub for your PRs, for your pull requests. Do you feel that this is really the best way of doing this communication, this collaboration? Or like I imagine that if you are a person, you know, that's designing software and designing productivity apps, maybe you have this lens of looking at other software flows or tools, especially engineering tools as well, and thinking, well, is that really the optimal way to do that? And I always wonder, so I actually see a couple of things that you could improve in the PR flow and in the way we are communicating through PRs, for example, at GitHub or GitLab. Is that also something that comes to your mind, or do you think this is actually pretty good for how we are using the tool?
I mean, you know, like I grew up without Git and like these PRs, like I grew up with Subversion and CSV. So I know like how much it sucked before, or even like before that, like sending, you know, zip and diffs, that was like really a nightmare. So I think like the current, like we are really, really fortunate with the tools that we have in software development. Of course, like they can always be improved, but it's like just light years ahead of what other, you know, fields have. And even if you look at like the history of Git, it's kind of like history, like, you know, the Linux kernel is kind of like a remote first team spread around the world. So it's kind of like optimized for this kind of like remote first structures and like asynchronous communication structures, because most of the communication is done like via mailing lists there. Yeah, so of course, like, we can improve this, but honestly, like, I'm very, very happy about the current flows. And also something we use is like, we use Twist, which is also asynchronous communication, as kind of like a glue between like GitHub. So for instance, like, if you want to ping somebody about like a pull request or an issue, like, you would basically do that on Twist, and then, you know, they will go to hit GitHub to, you know, solve the issue or like look at the specific problem or whatever else. Yeah. So I still think you kind of like need another layer. Like, a lot of teams use Slack, like, we don't. So like, our stack is mostly like asynchronous, and this helps a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, Twist is definitely something I want to talk with you about. Well, it's sort of very similar to, it's a communication platform similar to Slack, but has a different focus, right? So it's really designed for asynchronous communication instead of synchronous chats. And so what was your idea behind Twist? Why did you come up with this idea? And why go for a very, for this broad problem of communication and collaboration? It's not very specific to, for example, pull requests and the way that we communicate there, right? It's very focused on, well, now we have this goal in mind, where I guess Twist is similar to Slack, is a universal tool that you can use for any communication and any collaboration. Or did you have something in mind, like really engineering teams that are using it for a specific, you know, way of communicating?
Yeah. I mean, the way that we think about this, like, you know, like, that's where ambition comes in. Like, we really want to use like tools that change, you know, how we organize and how we communicate on like a global level, and not only for like developers. So this is kind of like a mindset. And also, you know, like, we are also like very focused inside this on other aspects such as design. Like, we're very design driven as well as engineering driven. So we also like always take like a more broader look and look at like the problem, the general problems that like a lot of teams are facing, and not only like what developers are facing. Yeah, so that's basically how we look at this aspect.
Okay. And so I know that at Doist you're actually working in squads, or at least you used to. Are you still working in terms of like collaborative interdisciplinary teams? And why did you choose that way of collaborating?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And honestly, like, the thing about this is kind of like, we do stuff a lot differently than most others. And we are always like, you know, trying to think from the first principles, is just instead of just like copying others. Of course, like, we have tried to copy others. It almost always does not really work for some reason. So basically, like, our structure is very unique in terms of how we work. And it's also like, I think from the outside, it might sound a bit insane. So basically, like, we have dynamic squads that are assembled and reassembled every month, like, depending. And sometimes they are running for multiple months. And we call these cycles. So we basically have like monthly cycles where, for instance, like, you can have like a cycle. For instance, like, one of the cycles right now, it's kind of like creating a better composer for Twist. And usually, like, these squads have like a designer, some engineers in them, maybe a support person or a marketing person. And they are basically like self-sufficient, that they can actually go in and solve the whole problem space, like, from start to finish, and deliver that. And then, apart from like these dynamic squads that are assembled, we also have like teams. So for instance, the iOS team is, I think, 7 people, at the Android team, and then we have backend and front end. And, you know, basically they're kind of like focusing more on like the holistic view of the code bases. Yeah. So that's kind of how we work. And then we also have something called internal do's, which is basically like team specific. We call them do's, which is basically like projects that, for instance, like iOS 14 is an upcoming do, and it's only affecting the iOS team. And they basically have like some a person allocated. Sometimes you can also have 2 persons allocated for that. And apart from like those, so we basically have like, you know, product squats, we have these internal squats, and then we also have personal do's, which is basically like one person like having a personal project that maybe isn't like even adding something to our product. For instance, like one of our designers did like Internet for Doist, where he basically like designed and coded everything in a cycle. And, you know, so that's how we work. And I think this is probably a very unique way. And I at least, like, I don't know many that do it like we do it. But yeah, I really like this structure. And of course, like, it has some like pros and cons. But in general, like, we are very happy about how we do this.
So how I imagine when you're describing it, how I imagine it is like, well, every squad now is a little self-sufficient, little startup sort of, right? So there's like, I don't know, five ambitious people that have all different, you know, talents and skills, and they're coming together and realize one thing in a very autonomous way. And I can see that this can be very, very impactful. Is there a final approval step, for example? Does every, you know, every feature that they, for example, deliver, does this go through the final approval by you or by you know, a team of owners or something like that? Or is that completely independent from start to end?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, we don't have like final approvals. We actually don't really have a lot of like hierarchy inside this, but I mean, for instance, like, something that's like very critical for us is kind of like code reviews, are also just like, you know, design reviews, getting input from others, is kind of like the alpha and beta testing, you know, so before like something gets out, like, it will get like a lot of other eyes on it, and a lot more like feedback will be given to a specific thing. So usually, you know, like, when we are ready to release something, like, it's usually very rock solid, and it has been like through a lot of like review and like testing periods. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, can I imagine that, for example, for the code reviews, you would have like a squad, and on the squad there is one developer or maybe two developers, but they are getting code reviews from other squads, or is that always within the same squad? How do you do that?
Yeah. So basically, they would get like reviews from their team. So for instance, like, if I'm an iOS engineer and I do like boards, then like boards will get reviewed by, you know, somebody else inside the iOS team. And maybe it will be like multiple people, like, over a time span. So that's how we do it. And I think like the beauty of this is kind of like that you have a lot of collaboration, and you also have like a lot of insights and input coming from other people that are maybe not, you know, fully into like the problem space that you're solving. And it also means that a lot of more people will actually know the code base better. Yeah. So, you know, another approach could be that you kind of have like just internal reviews inside squads, but then you kind of just like have, you know, a very constrained, like, maybe two people or whatever that can actually understand something. Yeah.
So When I look at your company culture and how you communicate it and the values that they're setting, I wonder, what about, for example, career ladders? How do you see them? Do you have like titles at Todoist? And if you have titles, what are, you know, how do you advance your career? Is there a concept like that you're, you know, getting more responsibility, getting promotions? And how does that work at Todoist?
You know, you touch a very a very present topic. Like, this is something that we are working on right now, and honestly, like, we have worked on this for like almost 2 years, and the problem for us is like we don't really want to add regular career paths. Like, we are 80 people right now, and it just like feels very wrong to do like the regular like things that most companies do. Because I think it kind of creates like this hierarchical structure where you have like these fancy titles and like people, you know, wanting to advance their titles, but maybe not really, you know, their skills or like their contribution or whatever else that is maybe more important, like a title. Yeah. So right now, honestly, like, we don't really have any titles. So we have like, we have three titles. So we have like a CXO, which is basically a C-level person. So we have like Gonzalo, who is our CTO. Then we have heads, and this can be like head of iOS. And then we basically have Doister, which is basically like the like everybody else. And we are about 80 people. And honestly, like this feels like the right approach for like our culture and the ethos of the of Doist itself. But you know, we still want to kind of like have a system where people can grow, and like, you know, mastery for us is very, very critical. Like personal growth is very critical. This is like why we invest like so much into like these personal dues. And you know, like if you think about it, like we like every year we invest about 80 months of just like personal improvements for people. And I don't think many companies do this. But of course, like we kind of like want to have like this career path, but it should really be focused on like mastering something and helping people grow, and not like all of this like bullshit with titles and like, you know, growing like your career in the normal sense. Yeah. So this is kind of my input. Like it's a very sensitive subject inside a company. And honestly, like we are on the revision 4, like we call it career paths version 4. We have not rolled this out yet because we are not kind of like sure how to do this. So we have not really found like this hell yeah solution where we are just like, you know, this makes a lot of sense. Like this, you know, this fits the company that we want to build and the culture that we want to build. Yeah. So I hope, you know, at some point we'll find this, and, you know, we will also definitely share it with others so other companies can follow and maybe also like think, you know, differently around this than just like these standard career ladders that you just copy from Google or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing with career ladders is also, well, first of all, we have like this, as you said, hierarchy, but then also you have very often, you if you want to advance as an engineer, for example, you're advancing into a different role. You're advancing into a management, for example, and suddenly you're not engineering really anymore. You're doing a lot of people management. And so, for example, what companies do like Automatics, they have those two very separated. So if you've become the engineering leader, which I don't know if this is similar to the head that you described, but if you do that, you're not, you know, you're not one step further than, for example, an engineer. You're, you know, on a completely different track. You have a different career path, and this is not a promotion. And I find that also very interesting, because I think, especially for, you know, people have very different interests and maybe also different skill sets. And saying, well, if you want to advance in your career, you have to become, you know, a manager, for example, and do very different things is an interesting concept, a little bit a strange concept as well. How do you think about that?
I mean, that is so spot on. And that's definitely how we think about it as well. And honestly, I think also like this status of like becoming a people manager and getting like a higher salary than people that are doing individual work, I think it's also like flawed, especially like in our industry. So with that like, and you also should not really force people, you know, to go into these like areas, for instance, like people management, where maybe it's not really your strength. You know, a lot of people don't have that strength, don't have the passion for this. I mean, honestly, for myself, like, I would also say, like, you know, I like to work a lot more with systems than like people issues. So even for myself, like, it's not really my strength to be like this, you know, like people, like only managing people. So that's why I actually still do some coding on the side, because like I would just find my, you know, job very, very boring if I was just like stuck in meetings and like people issues all day long. Yeah. So I can definitely relate to this like on a very personal level. And even like, I think for myself, like if there wasn't like a call to me, like to be the leader and to be CEO, I would probably also be an individual contributor, because, you know, that's probably where my focus would be, or like my happiness would be best, I think. But of course, like, you know, as a founder and as a, like a leader, like people really expect me to step up in this role. So I'm kind of like forced to do this. But, you know, I would probably also, so I have like a lot of respect for individual contributors. And I think this should definitely be a path, and it should be, you know, as recognized as like the management, people management path.
So one of the things that really fascinates me are those values that you promote in your company, company values. And I wonder, do you have like similar dedication also to engineering values? Do you have like that defined in this very clear way? Do you have revisions of that? Do you reflect as a company on the engineering values that you have? What means engineering rigor, for example, for us? What is a very high quality code base? How do we get to that space and things like that? And what are your thoughts about engineering rigor and values in that space?
I mean, that's a great question again, you know, and honestly, like something we have been very bad at during our history is kind of not focusing too much on that. And this becomes like a really big issue once you grow and you have like, you know, a lot more people, a lot more systems, a lot more code. Like if you don't have like the core values set, if you don't have the core practices set, then it basically becomes like a wild, wild west. And that's where I feel like we have actually slacked off and not really prioritized this enough. So like our CTO and engineering team are actually like doing this cleanup now where we are basically like, you know, like for instance, like setting like a handbook for engineering where we have like all of the like processes documented, where we have like core values set, like, you know, what do we value from the engineering side point? And like company values, like you can value everything and you also like need to like prioritize stuff. So for instance, like if performance is a core value, you know, it has some impact on other stuff. If testing is a core value, then like you'll probably be slower to actually develop stuff and to ship stuff. So you can like have two core values that kind of like are competing against each other. Like for instance, like ship fast and, you know, like test a lot. Like those things are probably like in, you know, in conflict with each other. Maybe that's not a best example, but you know, like I'm pretty sure like you can find some core values that are kind of like in conflict with each other. So you have to pick very carefully, like, you know, what do you want your engineering organization to prioritize? Then some other stuff. And I think this is also something that we have improved a lot, like at least for the last year, it's kind of like code linting. And like the tools are getting like really ridiculously good there. Like this, like in a code review, like you should never go in and comment about like code style, because code styles should be dictated by tools and not like humans. So that's again a thing they can actually automate. So that's what we do right now. And we are also like automating testing. So for instance, like you can't really push on the front end without having the test suite passed. So it also like, you know, makes the code review much easier, because, you know, you're not even going to be able to create like a pull request if the code does not really pass. So I think like honestly there's a lot of stuff that you can do there. And right now we also like are trying to become like better at testing in general, like automating testing a lot and doing it like also on the front end client side teams, which is historically much more difficult than like the back end. Yeah, and I wouldn't say like we are perfect at this, like we're just starting out, but I can definitely see like this being like a like major competitive advantage, and just, you know, have the ability to kind of create much better systems and much better products in the end. And, you know, that's what it's about.
Yeah, I'm a really big believer that if you have very clear engineering values, like you have very clear company values, those really shape your processes, your culture in your company, and shape very much also your product. And as you said, there are, you know, people want to have all the values, like I want to be good in everything, right? But you have to prioritize, and this shapes and shapes really how you develop your product and how your product will look like in the end. And there are trade-offs, and you have to make a choice for some of the things, right? What is number one and what is number two and things like that. So one thing that you touched on a little bit, but that I wanted to ask you before I let you go, is how do you keep the code base up to date? I imagine like when you first started working on this code base, is that code still part of Todoist, for example, at that moment? Or have you changed the code base completely? Have you thrown away old versions of the software system? And how do you keep it, you know, up to date, modern, and also maintainable?
Yeah, I think I can tell you, like, you know, I coded a lot of the early stuff myself, and especially, like, for instance, on the front end, like, most of our code was based on custom JavaScript, and actually I created, like, our own JavaScript library to to do that. And that is basically, like, a very, very, like, bad code base, because it's basically very outdated, and you have, like, much, much nicer tools right now to solve, like, the issues. For instance, like, React is a great example, Redux on just, like, an architecture level. So, for instance, on the front-end team, what we have done is basically, like, we have rewritten everything to React and Redux. And we actually still, like, we have some parts are still missing, but that's basically what we have done. And there's still some code that I have written long time ago there, but, you know, it's very minimal, and I'm very happy about that. And the like, it's just much more maintainable, especially with a much larger team. Yeah. On the back end, I think we have actually done a worse job. Like, we have not innovated enough, or, like, moved away enough, or adopted, like, better, like, abstractions and systems. So that is, I think, more problematic. And honestly, I think it's also, like, much harder to, like, rewrite or, like, redo the abstraction layer on the back end, because on the front end, like, you know, you do something, it just affects one client. On the back end, you do a refactoring, and suddenly you need to, like, migrate, like, millions, or for us, it's like hundreds of millions of projects, you know, billions of tasks. It becomes very, very unmanageable. And, like, each migration, like, if we want to do a schema update, you know, it takes days to do that. So it's not, like, as fast to actually evolve the back end as it is to evolve the front end. And I think this is holding us back, and the team is kind of, like, fighting with this on a daily basis. And what we are kind of trying to do right now on the back end is kind of, like, rewrite our models from scratch, and then basically, like, migrate our old data to the new models instead of, like, this constant, like, patching of, like, broken abstractions, because I think that is not really a good way forward. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see how that's, it's, as you said, it's easier on the front end because you have less dependencies and less compatibility issues than on the back end. So I would like to ask you a couple of questions to wrap that episode up that people actually asked me on Twitter to ask you. And so one question was, now that we have, especially with this pandemic, even more companies are somehow even forced into remote work, right? And they're relying on synchronous communication platforms like Slack and Teams. Now, Twist is this asynchronous communication platform. How can we envision that? What does this mean? How does the communication work with, for example, Twist? And what are your thoughts about those two differences in the way of communicating with each other?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And honestly, like, that's something that we find very broken in the current culture. It's kind of like this real-time focus. And, you know, we have been part of this ourselves. Like, we were one of the early adopters of Slack. And we think, like, this creates, you know, much more stressful environments, and they actually produce much worse, like, code or designs or products. So that's why we kind of are very focused on, like, this asynchronous way, and, like, focusing more on deep work than this shallow work that is promoted. Yeah, and honestly, like, most of the current companies are not really focused on this, and we think it's a huge error. So, you know, what kind of implication this will have, I think, are significant, because if you have one team that can actually solve really hard problems, that can deep workly, and the deep, like, deep work is kind of like the default way, like, I think they will outperform a team that's basically stressed out, that is basically chit-chatting all day long, and just, like, doing shallow work and shallow solutions most of the time. So that's at least how we think about it. It's like, it's a huge competitive advantage, especially when you combine, like, asynchronous first and remote first, like, that you can actually hire great people from anywhere in the world, then it becomes, like, a significant competitive advantage.
Yeah, so one of the things that I was really happy when I left my corporate job was that I'm not forced to be part of those instant synchronous communication that completely overflowed my buffer, more or less, right? So I was completely stressed out that I cannot, you know, keep up because I like to read everything. And so this is not possible, and you have all these interruptions. So this was definitely something that I'm really happy that I don't have to use, you know, Slack channels. I don't have to keep, you know, keep this pressure of being up to date. I recall when I was working at Microsoft, for example, I had this habit of looking at my emails only at certain times during the day because I didn't want, you know, to be distracted all the time. So yeah, I can also see how that this deep work culture and this mindset of, you know, that you don't interrupt the other person all the time and they're not there. It's a way of rethinking your workday, right? If you're relying on that somebody is responding within the next 5 minutes, you're working in a very different way than if you know actually that, you know, it might take 4 hours until you get a reply from somebody. But I think it creates, for the person that's not interrupting, it creates a lot of space and a lot of, as you said, deep work opportunities. And so this is really cool. So as a last question, Amir, that I want to ask you, and I think a lot of my listeners want to know, is how do we get a job at Doist, right? So I think it's one of those companies, and I think you talked about it before, that you're getting a lot of applications. And so what are some of the things that you're looking for in a potential employee, in a person that you would like to have join your team? What are some of the skills, the traits, personality that you're looking forward, where you think, well, this is actually a good fit for our company?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And honestly, like I think something that we are very fortunate about as a company is kind of like this remote first aspect. You know, we can hire people from anywhere. And usually, like when we actually do a job posting, we get like thousands of applicants. So actually getting into Doist is really, really difficult at this current time. Of course, like it may change as like more like these huge companies are moving into remote territory. And what do we look inside for a person? I mean, honestly, like, first of all, it's really like important that they are very passionate about the problems that we solve. So for instance, like, you know, organization and team communication, like you really need to be passionate about that. That's one aspect. Another aspect is like really, we really love people that are kind of like really great at their craft and really focused on their growth. So a lot of like the best people we have hired are kind of just like, you know, they grow a lot and they are really focused on like mastering their crafts. A third maybe is also like really loving like what you do. And a lot of our developers, for instance, have done like personal projects, open source projects on the side. And this, for us, it's kind of like a great, you know, indicator that somebody like is so passionate about like this that they actually like will work on stuff like open source stuff without actually being compensated for it. And even myself, like, you know, I have done open source projects and I also have published my Vim RC on GitHub. So I think this is also like a very important aspect of the general culture. It's kind of like, you know, we really love what we do and we want to become like really, really great at it. Yeah. So I, you know, those were like maybe 3 tips I could share. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, Amir, I think we are at the end of this interview. I was really happy that you have been here on my show. Is there something that you would like my listeners to know? Maybe I will link, obviously, your website, I will link your Twitter, but is there something else that you wanted to share with my audience before we're wrapping up?
I think it's a difficult time for most of us. And, you know, I hope everybody's staying safe. And yeah, it also seems like the problems, at least in Europe, are getting better while some other places are getting worse. So yeah, I hope everybody's safe. And yeah, if you want, I think the best way to actually stay connected with me is via Twitter. I'm quite a regular user. And also, like, if you have any other like specific questions, you're, you know, welcome to add tag me and I will try to respond to it.
Okay. Thank you so much. So enjoy the rest of your day, Amir. Thank you so much for joining my show.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Software Engineering Unlocked podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Bye.